Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Keith Haley. This is an encore edition of the Blog Talk Radio show, Jumble Justice, and we hope you enjoy tonight's show.
Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston.
It's time for the next edition of the riveting Jumble Justice radio show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice radio show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the fall season of Jumble Justice Radio. And we're on the Blog Talk Radio Network, of course. And folks, Mike and Emily, good to see you there tonight. Don't walk away tonight. I think there are ghosts in the control booth. We've been logged off twice. And on the main billing, on the page that everybody else sees, other than those of us that work inside, it says our show's on the 12th. I panicked when I saw that, but I checked it out in three other locations, and we are on live at this very moment. So we're certainly glad of that. And we want to thank Johnny Cash for taking us on that wonderful ride again across the United States, where he takes us to 90 different cities and states. What a song to sing from memory, and Johnny Cash was able to do that. Purpose of our show is the same as it is every week. We try to discuss news and issues, events, and special developments in this difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And our show is dedicated to those untiring police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed the world. And our first guest in this fall season this year is going to be a return guest, and I could not think of a better person to talk on the subject that we're going to discuss tonight. And I'll hold that for just a moment. What we try to do is look inside the criminal justice practice, and see what the professionals do, and they're always busy, so there's always something to talk about. We want to thank Alan Levy, who's CEO of Blog Talk Radio Network, the network that is now one of the top 100 websites in the world, and now that archives more than 100,000 radio shows. If you can believe that, ladies and gentlemen, and I guess the best thing about BTR is this: your organization, you represent an organization, a club, an interest group, or just yourself. And I want to do a little self-promotion. You, in fact, can sign up in about 15 minutes and have your own radio show where you can broadcast live and streaming audio across the Internet worldwide to how many listeners? An unlimited number of listeners, and it costs absolutely nothing. Can you believe it? I mean, I cannot believe it. We're finally getting more organizations on here to have shows opposed to individuals, but not as much as I thought, but any type of criminal justice agency, school, university, college, can have their own thing. In fact, you could teach classes right off the Blog Talk radio network. So we're all set to do it. I say, you know, get your own show if you don't like this one, just like that slogan on the back of a Cheez-Its box. What we do tonight is what we always do. We're going to talk a little bit about some criminal justice news. There's always stacks and stacks of it. I never get to all that I print out and lay on my table here, but we'll do that. We'll have some listener calls if they're interested in calling in. And our guest tonight is going to be Sheriff Tim Rodenberg, who I think, Tim, he can let us know when he comes on, but I believe he's a fourth-term sheriff. He's running unopposed in Claremont County, just east of Cincinnati. Beautiful county. If you've never been there from another part of the country, you want to visit a place in Ohio, go down to Claremont County, and you'll see an absolutely lovely place that has as fine a law enforcement protection as you can have anywhere. I'll introduce Sheriff Rodenberg when he does, in fact, come on. But what you can do as a caller, you can call in on the number 347-996-5983. What we're able to do is to hold five calls at one time on the show if you choose to call in, so all four or five of us can talk together if we choose to do that. Audrey, I think we might as well go ahead. You've got a blonde joke for us tonight? I think so. You had a special one last week. That tricked us up a little bit. I love that, the Blonde Star car service for for blondes. That was a good one. I like this one tonight, and I think you picked this one particularly because the sheriff was coming on, correct? Right. You knew that Sheriff Rodenberg had been a Marine pilot, so I hope he's listening and he's able to hear this this particular blonde joke. Audrey, why don't you go ahead and tell this one?
Professor Haley, we have an aviation blonde joke for this week. Remember last week it was one about the blonde locked in her car? Well, not actually, but you know what I mean. I think our listening audience will enjoy this one. A blonde went to a flight school insisting she wanted to learn to fly. As all the planes were currently in use, the owner agreed to instruct her by radio on how to pilot the solo helicopter. He took her out, showed her how to start it, and gave her the basics, and sent her on her way. After she climbed 1,000 feet, she radioed in, "I'm doing great. I love it. The view is so beautiful, and I'm starting to get the hang of this." After 2,000 feet, she radioed again, saying how easy it was to fly. The instructor watched her climb over 3,000 feet, and was beginning to worry that she hadn't radioed in. A few minutes later, he watched in horror as she crashed about half a mile away. He ran over and pulled her from the wreckage. When he asked what happened, she said, "I don't know. Everything was going fine, but as I got higher, I was starting to get cold. I can barely remember anything after I turned off the big fan."
Blonde joke subcategory aviation. I like that one. She turned off the big fan. That's as good as last week, Audrey. Thank you. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, and certainly apropos of our subject tonight, the Ohio Coalition has a message to those on the street, and we're going to play that message for you right now, and we hope that the gangbangers and street criminals will pay attention to this and certainly not go out and commit crime tonight, and even the best of our hopes would be that they would go turn in their firearms. So, Ohio Coalition, go ahead.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition. It certainly is a deadly idea, and I think because of our switchboard problems tonight, and who knows what may happen, at least it was pre-show, I'm going to go ahead and click on Sheriff Rodenberg, who's come on, and see if we can connect with him and get going right away. Sheriff, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me, Keith?
Yes, I can. Very well. It's coming through excellent. That's the Blog Talk Radio secret. They do it with telecom type of communication stuff and not the computer business. How are you doing tonight, Sheriff?
Pretty good, Professor. Thanks for having me on. I tried to get on before using my microphone here. It said click to talk.
Right.
It took me
work.
A few minutes, but that didn't seem to work. So I don't. Maybe you should email me instructions for future programs. I don't know.
I think there's anything wrong other than tonight they're having some kind of special problems. I'm not sure what it is because twice they said that I was on and then it knocked me off the air, you know, prior to the show start time, and they said they were having server problems and they'd get it fixed, and they usually do. I mean,
okay.
VTR fix something, they go. So we're good for 10 or 11 minutes so far, so let's hope we can.
Well, very good. I am here with you, sir.
Okay, well, that's great. Tim, we start off with a little bit of news, and I know you've got a lot to talk about tonight, and I don't want to spend much time on that, but a couple of these things are interesting. I'm thinking of Claremont County. Good portion of that's rural and highly rural, isn't it?
It's about half and half, Keith. We're a bedroom community of Cincinnati, so we have some places in our county that I don't want to insult anyone, but it's a little bit like Deliverance Country.
There you go.
And then as you get closer to Cincinnati, it's much like the outskirts of Columbus, Dublin, Ohio. You know where that is, of course. And the best community right around the Beltway, where we're right off of there, Miami Township, Union Township in Claremont County. There's some malls and a very concentrated retail area. But drive 15 minutes east, and you think you're in another world if you close your eyes and open them again.
It's kind of the best of all worlds, isn't it, really? I love that county.
It is. It's a great place to live. We have very little violent crime to speak of, and if it is violence, it's usually among people who know each other, unfortunately family members or illegal transactions, if you will, drug deals gone bad. But as far as random violence against innocent citizens who aren't involved in criminal activity, there's not very much of that at all.
Well, just allow me to say this, and I mean it. I'd hate to be a criminal in your county and having you and your fine crew chase me.
Well, thank you, Keith. And as you know from the Marine Corps, because we both were Marines, I guess we'll always be Marines, our troops do all the work. We put the ship in the direction we want it to go, but quite frankly, the credit goes to them, and they do an excellent job. And, you know, that along with the Marine Corps has been the most rewarding experience of my life to serve with great men and women like I have on board our Claremont County Sheriff's ship, I guess we could say.
And I know that you have a very fine motto for your department, too. Leadership by example, is that correct?
Correct, Keith. I brought that in 1997 when I came into office. That's something, of course, as you again recall from the Marine Corps. Basically,
mm-hmm.
You set the example. You tell your troops, that, watch me. You can do everything I can do and more, but don't do anything less, and I'll walk the walk and talk the talk, and I won't set standards that I won't follow myself.
So here's a couple of news stories I thought you might comment. I started about the chasing idea because I saw, in fact, I actually watched the video on YouTube. There's several of them on there, the same thing. I imagine in Claremont County you've chased everything, little cattle now and then. Your troops have probably done that, right, when they get away?
Probably a couple times a month. Yeah, you'll hear a call come out that a cow's on the loose or something, and yes, we have to do that from time to time.
Have you ever chased a skateboarder going 80 miles an hour?
Now, that I can't say we've had any of. And I will tell you this, you know, unlike some other places, I've told my deputies, hey, skateboarders are doing their own thing. Unless they're destroying property, let those kids alone, because I sort of have a near and dear place in my heart for skateboarders. Our son, who's 25, started skateboarding when he was about 14, and unfortunately, well, I don't know, he's got some good buddies, but he's still at it. So, no,
well,
we've never done that.
I liked any type of mobile activity you can get involved in, and I had skates as soon as they came out, and I've got quad line skates, and I've got rollerblades right now, and all sorts of things. But anyway, they caught this guy on the Autobahn in Germany. He got a motorcycle pull, and it turned him loose, and he's going downhill near Stuttgart, and where they actually have a speed limit. Most of the Autobahn there is none, and they clocked him at 80 miles an hour on a skateboard.
You know, I have to tell my son about that, but, well, maybe on second thought, I probably shouldn't. He might say, Pop, if I can beat that, I'll go 85, so.
Yeah, well, watch that one on YouTube. I thought this was interesting, too, a case that you probably paid a little bit of attention to since it was closed, but I think this is probably one of the most atrocious things I've ever heard of. They debated over what to do with this woman, and they finally sentenced her, I think, this past Monday. The woman who put her baby in the microwave. Have you ever heard of
that? That was down in this area, sure. That was over in Cincinnati area,
My God, and she got life, what did she get? She got life without parole. Does that really mean that in Ohio?
I think it does, but I'll tell you what, Keith, it's sort of amazing, and you know this from your studies and research, that when you say life imprisonment, it barely, very rarely means that.
Well, you know, they got life in prison with a friend of ours, and he was out in 12 years.
That's correct, and I think nationwide they say the average is right around 10 years or less for life imprisonment, so very, very few people who get that sentence actually spend their whole life in prison or die there. They find some way, or the system finds some way of letting them out.
Okay, I always try, I like to get news stories. This is my last one, and we're going to get to the CCW business tonight, but I thought this was interesting. I always try to think about criminal justice implications. And now we have something that's been generally considered worthless and hard to get rid of that looks to me like it's going to have value in the future. But have you heard about what San Antonio just did? The city of San Antonio has now unveiled a deal where they're going to make methane gas from human waste. All the human fecus in the city, they generate 140,000 tons of it a year. And they're going to turn that into natural gas. It's all set up. They've done it. And they're going to run generators and power generators and all sorts of things in the city. So now, I don't see how they could charge you for waste collection because they're using it and making money off of it. Isn't it?
Well, that would be, I'll tell you, if they can do something like that. You know, people are already beginning to have the jitters over this winter. I've been looking at the news, and they say the natural gas prices are going to go through the roof, and they said it could be 60%, give or take, higher than last year. And with the gas prices for gasoline,
well, you know what
I don't know how some people are going to survive.
You know what I'm thinking with that is sad, but I'm thinking, Tim, that maybe here, you know, we've got, you know, different public places across the United States and cities, you've got, like, pay toilets, right? So now maybe these are going to be pay me toilets.
There you go. Now, hey, that would be a great idea.
Who knows what's going to happen with that, but I thought that was an odd one. There's some other cities that have tinkered with this, but apparently San Antonio's got... you can think of all kinds of jokes you can make about that, but I won't tonight.
I hear you, man.
Well, Tim, Ohio has made some significant changes, I guess, a couple of times with the CCW law since it went into effect, right, about 4 years ago?
Well, correct, Keith. We were one of the last states, Ohio was, to pass CCW licensing. There was a lot of resistance, I think primarily, and I don't want to speak for them, but from what I heard from the State Highway Patrol. And for some reason, the Ohio Association of Chiefs of Police, perhaps to a little lesser degree, this all started 10, maybe 15 years ago, and they, at least at first, one or both of those groups were quite opposed to the idea of allowing citizens to carry concealed weapons. So Ohio lagged behind... 45, 47 other states in the country in passing the law. So in April of 2004, we finally did so, and it has been modified a couple times since. It's a, I'd say, a moderately restrictive law. There are some that are much more liberal. There's a few that are much more restrictive. But if you had to put it on the scale, we're probably leaning a little bit more still on the side of the more stringent, more restrictive area.
All right, and it's... you know, it's something that people thought a lot about. I have an idea, and again, I know we have a fine highway patrol. They did have a bad day this week, though, I guess, with you heard about firing 12 of them, right, all at one time?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Fired 12 Ohio State Highway Patrol officers. Three of them were sergeants. They were cheating on their recertification exam for the breathalyzer.
Oh, I saw that. Yes, that's a shame, and they all got fired.
Right.
Now, it'll be interesting to see how that goes through the system, but no, that is a shame. For something that simple, and some of these people, it's sort of amazing, Keith, and I'm sure you've seen in your career, officers have been around for a decade or two. I mean, they're just about nearing retirement, or they're getting close enough to do something completely boneheaded like that that wouldn't take them 5 or 10 hours to study for. I mean, it would take not even a work day, and they do something to cut a corner, they get caught, in her whole career, and in some cases her pension's down the tube after putting in all that time on the job, not to mention the loss of her reputation. I've never been able to understand it.
Well, I thought that their resistance, I read the original document the Chiefs did when this first came out, and in fact, I even talked about it in a graduate class, and it was a ridiculous statement. I mean, it was so illogical and really incoherent. I've still got it. And then the Chiefs eventually kind of, I think they listened to the line people, and then the line people sort of changed their mind about it, and they came out supporting the thing in the end. But, boy, the original document was just a foolish document. But I thought our Highway Patrol, it's kind of based on the idea that maybe because they don't have criminal jurisdiction as a regular course of their duty, they were a little more sensitive to this. But state police surrounding us here in Indiana and Pennsylvania, Michigan, would probably take a different view of that. What do you think of that idea, Ted?
Well, I think the main problem with the State Highway Patrol was they do mostly traffic, as you know, in Ohio. A lot of people don't realize this, but they're not a state police. The state police powers are for everything in the state, criminal and et cetera. So 90% of their work, the troopers out there, is stopping cars and investigating accidents and issuing citations or warnings or whatever the case may be. And I think at first they were very, very concerned about citizens carrying firearms in vehicles because they felt that that would create and elevate their risk substantially. I never could quite understand that because bad guys, of course, have always carried guns, and unfortunately they've killed many, many officers during traffic stops. But to give a law-abiding citizen the right to carry a firearm and assume that they would then convert that into a license to shoot a state trooper over a speeding violation, I think would be stretching it quite a bit. But for some reason, that was a real stumbling block, and I think, not maybe for those same reasons, I never did get quite the rationale, but the Ohio Chiefs Association was not very keen on the idea either.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, why don't you take us through kind of some of the, if we could do it in this order, talk to us about the changes that went into effect this past Monday, and then maybe from there we can go back and talk about some of the things that you think were wrong with the law or sort of odd about our particular law. But Monday, on June 10th, I guess Governor Strickland signed Senate Bill 184, right? In fact, I printed the whole bill out.
Correct. It went into effect this week, so it's now effective. I mean, this is a new law in Ohio, and it's really important that citizens know about this because if they've got a license, they certainly don't want to be operating under the old law that existed before this week because there are quite a few changes, and quite frankly, what it's done is it's loosened up things, or I guess you could almost say liberalized concealed carry in Ohio, which at first was in 2004 somewhat restrictive.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the major things, Sarah?
Well, the first thing one of the things they added in there is they reduced the penalty for failing to tell a law enforcement officer you are carrying concealed with a license if they know about it. In other words, an officer sees a car speeding down the street, he calls into dispatch, gets a license number, and the dispatch tells him, well, this is registered to so-and-so, and by the way, they have a concealed carry license. That is all in this computer system, by the way. When you get a concealed carry license, that will be in the Ohio LEADS system, which will let officers know if they run your name or your license number that you have a concealed carry license. But in this case, if they know about it through dispatch or something like that, and then they walk up to your car and you fail to tell them that you have a concealed carry permit, it is now only a minor misdemeanor. It used to be a misdemeanor of the first degree, carrying 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. But they have reduced this now to only a $100 fine, only no jail. If, again, the key is, if the officer has previous knowledge or got knowledge that you have a concealed carry license from dispatch or whatever information he might receive or from whatever source. Now, if the officer does not get that information back and approaches you, say you're walking down the street and the officer comes up to you and says, do you have a concealed carry? Or he wouldn't ask you that, of course. What's your name? I'm Officer so-and-so. I'd like your ID, please. The first thing out of your mouth has to be, I'm so-and-so. Give me your name. I am a concealed carry license holder, and I am carrying concealed. If you do that, you're fine. But if you fail to do that and the officer does not have information from dispatch or whatever. It is still a misdemeanor of the first degree, carrying up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. So bottom line is a concealed carry holder has to let the officer know they're carrying concealed, but depending on the circumstances, it could be a payout ticket, a $100 fine, or 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine.
Now, if I'm not carrying but hold a license, am I still required?
If you're not carrying the license?
No, I'm
carrying,
not.
Oh, if you're, let's see, you're carrying concealed without a license?
Got me in a car. I have a concealed carry license, but I don't have a gun in the car or on me.
No, you don't have to. Don't worry about it then.
Okay.
I don't think you need to worry about it then because you don't have a gun and it will not present a harm to the officer. It's only if you have an officer, or excuse me, you have a license and you're carrying the shield. So there's still the requirement to notify, and there always was, but quite frankly, they've reduced the penalties. I believe even, in fact, Keith, at first it was a felony of the fifth degree. Back in 2004. I'm not sure about that, but it's not anymore. But it has not removed the requirement to notify the officer. It's just reduced the penalty. But anyone that's carrying concealed should be advised in Ohio immediately when the officer approaches you. Let them know you have a license and you're carrying concealed, because otherwise you could be subjected to either a fine and or jail.
I've been stopped once and wasn't carrying, and I told them, you know, I have a CCW license, but I don't have one with me. And that was all there was to it.
Sure.
Any farther, but now, in terms of inside that car, there's some subtleties in here. If you could look at sort of that historical perspective, I think originally, well, you tell me, you had to have it either the dashboard and a locked rack. You had
right.
to have a locked glove box, or you had to have it unconcealed on your person, correct? That was the original law? In other words, you could have it on you, like a shoulder holster, but you couldn't have a coat on.
Well, they've cleared that up, thank
right.
God. That was a very, very confusing area. In motor vehicles now, you can carry concealed if it's in an holster on your person.
Okay.
You can do that, and that's the simplest way to put it. That's the best way to do it. If you're going to carry a concealed handgun, have it on your person in a holster, and it can be concealed or not concealed, and you're fine. Before, there was a question about that. It could be in a glove compartment unlocked, trunk unlocked, another container unlocked. They've eliminated all that. So in a motor vehicle now, a concealed carry holder can carry a weapon in a holster on their person, concealed or not concealed.
If I'm wearing a suit coat, can I drop a small weapon in my pocket, or do I have to have a holster?
It has to be a holster, Keith. That's a good question. The concealed carry law requires it be in a holster. They don't want it in pockets, boots, in your waistband. What have you. I think the concern is there is it's possible to be dropped, discharged, or what have you. So, yes, all the concealed carry provisions require it to be in some sort of a holster, not just in your pocket.
But would the pocket holster work? You've seen those, of course.
I think if it's in the holster, if it's in the pocket, you're fine. But as long as it's a holster and not just slipped in your pocket.
Okay. Good. And then you can also have it in the console between your seats in the front of the car, unlocked?
Well, now, see, that's where you get into difficulties. No, the answer is no. If it's not on your person and it's not in a holster, then you've got some other issues that you have to deal with, and it can get pretty complicated when it comes down to being transported. It's supposed to be in a unlocked but closed glove compartment or vehicle console. In other words, it can be in there, but it can be closed and unlocked, and it can be a glove compartment or a vehicle console, but it can't, you know, there's some issues, there's still some questions about, can you just leave it on the seat? And some of this is going to have to be determined, unfortunately, through the Attorney General and various court cases, but yeah, the way they talk about it now, the way the law has been changed, is you can transport a loaded handgun in an unlocked but closed glove compartment or vehicle console. So make sure the vehicle compartment or console or glove compartment is closed.
Makes it a little bit easier to deal with a carjacker, right?
Absolutely. Yes, sir. And by the way, since we're talking on 9/11, we all know what happened on this date, not much has changed with airlines. There's still no carrying on airlines. If you have a concealed carry license from any state, you cannot go on an air carrier with your concealed weapon. So some people think you can, but you cannot. Unfortunately, I think that could be changed, but there could be some issues in separating the good guys from the bad guys.
Still there? Doctor's call. Well, we'll wait for the sheriff to call back. I was about ready to ask him about the Castle Doctrine, which is Ohio's finally adopted that idea, and Governor Strickland signed that into law also, along with the Senate Bill 184, I believe. And I think Tim will call back in here in just a moment. So that's an important law, and I think we're probably, I'm guessing Tim will probably know, we're probably the 17th, 18th state that's adopted the Castle Doctrine. And what that allows is if somebody used to be, you had a duty to retreat. I need to introduce Tim and let you know that he's been a prosecutor for 13 or 14 years and, of course, has a law degree and been a defense attorney. So he'll know the details on that. But they're no longer, you no longer have a duty to retreat when somebody breaks in to rob, rape, burglarize you. If you feel that you're in a serious danger from that, there's no burden of proof, I think, where you have to establish that that was going to happen. There's an assumption, but I'm going to ask him about that now. There, Tim?
I'm back.
Okay, we got dropped. I don't know how it happened. Was
well,
it
I got another phone. I don't know if it's my phone or yours, but I'm back on. Yeah, I forget where I was, Keith.
We were talking about, you know, carrying inside the car and how liberalized to the point where it's easy for somebody or fairly understandable for somebody now to know when to defend themselves and how they can carry the weapon in the car. And, of course, that means loaded.
Yes, either in a glove compartment, a console that's closed, or on their person in a holster, which, by the way, was not permitted before. It was very odd. That created a lot of confusion, and now it's allowed. I mean, I don't know. I think what you would have to do, the odd thing is when you got into your car, you would have to secure your weapon in another way. You could not leave it in the holster on your person. But let's forget about that because that will just confuse people. Now you can, again, as long as it's in the holster.
Right. And then, you know, those two other ways in the old law, if you had it, you know, visible on you, you see people parking, and you're driving a parking lot, people see you with a gun, or it's up on a rack locked up. They see that guy's driving around with a pistol. I would think they would be getting calls, you know, to the police department that I saw this guy in the parking lot with a gun, you know?
Well, absolutely. And the other thing about guns, Keith, as you know from your experience, the less they're handled, the better.
Yeah.
If you're taking them from a trunk and putting them on you and taking them off you and moving them from here to there, that's when accidents can happen. So this law eliminates that, and I think it's a good idea.
When I wrote my paper, a book chapter on it's called The Politics of Packing, a Political Analysis of the Texas Right to Carry Law, part of my methodology was to go to a couple training programs. So I went to the Plano, Texas training program for their new CCW law, and they of course, have the right to take the gun from you, you know, give you the gun, and of course, their idea was, hey, we ain't going to be passing no gun back and forth. You know, just tell me where it is, and that'll suffice.
Exactly.
You know, Texas has that odd law that they had this big deal about the CCW law, which George Bush signed, and Ann Richards said she wouldn't. I think the polls changed about 2% after that happened. But it's moot anyway in Texas because if you're traveling more than two counties, you can carry a concealed firearm in your car.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, just an aside about Texas, Keith, I heard from a sheriff this week. I went to a seminar. It was talking about border security. Of course, we could talk all night about that. But he said there's a county in Texas along the border that is about 9,000-plus square miles. Now, if you can imagine that. 9,000-plus. Claremont County, where I live, and Hamilton County, has got about 400 square miles, 450.
Right.
And he said in that county there is a sheriff and three deputies.
My Lord.
To cover 9,000 square miles. I thought I heard him wrong, but he said it again. So unless he was misspeaking, that's almost amazing.
Well, Texas only has 254 counties.
Is that right? People don't realize how big it is, but it's huge.
254 sheriffs. Can you believe that?
Right.
Well, the other thing about that, I'll just finish with that, is that also you're allowed to carry a sawed-off shotgun as long as it wasn't shorter than an 18-inch barrel. And you could carry that concealed in your car anywhere without a license. In fact, they had a case down there. It was in East Texas where a guy ran along the side of his car, and the cop shot him in the back, and sure enough, when they looked in the car, guess what he had in there? A sawed-off shotgun. People would see that and say, well, what did they shoot him for? Well, because he was legally carrying a sawed-off shotgun in the car.
Well, correct. And in Ohio, if it's at least 24 inches and no less than 18, it doesn't need to be an enclosed case anymore. It could be in a rack, as long as it's in plain sight with the action open.
Ohio
or
can
the weapon.
Texas, it can be underneath the seat, concealed loaded, a shotgun. Isn't that something? I had students who carried them.
That's correct.
Like, depending on where you are. Well, could you tell us a little bit about this, I guess part of the same thing and some of the information you gave me, the Castle Doctrine. You know, I didn't introduce you properly. Sheriff Rubenberg, of course, is a lawyer, graduate of the University of Cincinnati. He's been a Marine pilot, a Marine infantry commander. He's worked with the Cincinnati Police Department and, of course, has been sheriff. Are you on your fourth term, Ken?
Well, I'm running in 2 months, Keith, and I need a one vote. Now, my wife told me you better vote for yourself because I'm not sure I want to vote for you again. So no one's running against me. So I'll be on my – yeah, this will be my fourth term. I'm finishing my 12th year, and the first term I had someone run against me, but none since then. So looks like I'll be around at least another 4 years.
Wonderful. Well, what's the Castle Doctrine? What is that?
Well, that's something that Ohio passed. Other states have had it. And basically, it's based on the old adage, your home is your castle.
Yeah.
It removes the duty to retreat from a criminal attack to defend yourself or your family or someone else if you're lawfully in your residence or in a vehicle. If someone attacks you, in other words, you wake up in the middle of the night and someone's breaking in your house. The old rule, or what was implied in the law at least, is if someone's coming in the front window, you should run out the back window before you defend yourself, which was sort of stupid. But in any event, now you don't have to retreat. You can stand your ground if you've got a shotgun and someone's coming at you and it appears as if you're going to be criminally attacked. You can use force to defend yourself or your family members or whatever. And the burden of proof, this is the important thing from the legal provisions, is not yours anymore. But it falls on the prosecution. The prosecution has to say that you were not acting in self-defense. You were acting recklessly or criminally and attempting to hurt someone. It was crazy, Keith, but in the past, people could be charged and convicted of defending their homes because the law was tilted in the direction of the guy that was intruding into your home and not to the homeowner. But this changes all that. And it also reduces and eliminates the possibility and makes it a lot more hard for someone to sue you for coming into your home and you shooting them. Believe it or not, there were past cases where a bad guy would break into someone's home.
Correct.
The homeowner would confront them. There'd be a struggle. The homeowner would shoot the person. And the bad guy would turn around and sue the homeowner. In some cases, actually got damages from the homeowner. There's provisions in the law that sort of eliminate or make that extremely difficult now. So that's the Castle Doctrine. Your home is your castle. You can protect it. But there is an important thing that people need to remember there. It's you or your family or the personal or physical well-being of people.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you wake up, you hear something in your driveway, and you look out and someone's stealing your brand-new Corvette.
Right.
You cannot shoot them out the window and say, well, I was relying on the Castle Doctrine, because the rule of law is basically you need to let them steal it. You can maybe go and grab them, but you better not use deadly force to protect property. You can use deadly force to protect yourself or your family from a violent assault, serious injury, or death, but if it comes down to a car, a motor home, your motorcycle, you cannot use deadly force to stop that. And I think the concern is here, the thing that worries me a little, I think it's a great doctrine, don't get me wrong. I would hate to see citizens overuse it, because if someone shoots somebody for just stealing or vandalizing their property or what have you, they could be on the other end of a criminal prosecution.
And what happens if you got several of those, you're going to get the legislature fired up and probably willing to take back this this change, something like that, or at least modify. Let me ask you a couple particulars about it. Okay, let's suppose they got a screwdriver in the hand after they just pried open your downstairs living room window. And they're coming up the stairs, and they've got a screwdriver, you've got a shotgun. What has to happen before your shooting of them is legal? Or is it already
taken? See, that's a tough, that's a real tough one. I mean, if it were you or me, and the guy was about half our size, it could make a difference. But what if the guy looks like Rosie Greer? Remember him, the football player?
Yes, I do.
Well, I mean, then you have to go into the height, the weight, the sex maybe, the gender, the relative size of the individual, what weapons they have, i.e., it's not you at home, but your wife or my wife, who's a smaller person, not physically as fit perhaps, or, well, at least seemingly as us.
Right.
Gender can come into play. So, you know, it's very hard to say. Someone just walking up the steps, quite frankly, in your house, you know, that would be a close one. Now, I've always said, and I won't get me into too much trouble on this particular show, but, and I've told other people this, I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6. And if you think of that, I mean, you know, if you're acting reasonably under the circumstances, you can articulate later, hey, this person shouldn't have been in my house. They weren't just stealing my silver or my jewelry from downstairs or my DVD or TV set. They were coming up into my bedroom area. I felt I had to protect my family. I had a wife, a kid up there, several kids. I shot them. I'll be honest with you, Keith, probably under those circumstances, a person that had no right to be there, you're probably going to be home free. But you never know. And all these things are fact-driven. That's the important thing to remember. The specific facts of every case are going to determine what happens. And one little fact, flipped one way or the other, could change the whole outcome.
So it might make sense to kind of see this in two parts. You don't have to, A, you don't have to run from them anymore. But
right.
B, you use deadly force unless you actually fear serious bodily injury or death, right?
That is the best way of putting it. And quite frankly, if you could get out a back door or window, that would still be a prudent way to go. And that way you're not even faced with that. Run to the next door neighbors, call 911, and you're good to go.
You know, just we mentioned Texas because we live there, and it's always in the news. But Texas, you know, you can use deadly force to protect property after sunset.
Is that right?
As soon as the sun's down, they'll present the case to the grand jury, but they won't touch you. And the purpose of that is somebody owns he's owned, you know, 9, 10, 12,000, 18,000 acre ranches, and if you couldn't, and the sheriff 70 miles down the road in that whatever county, maybe farther than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Use deadly force. You know, you got these big combines and this expensive equipment, $300,000-$400,000 whack, and cattle. As a matter of fact, you know, they can come out and rustle cattle. I don't know what you're getting for that nowadays, but you know, they can steal you blind.
Well, exactly. And that, Keith, you raised another interesting point, or very important point. People need to know that we have 50 different states. And every law and every set of criminal codes in every state is entirely different.
Yes.
And if you move from one state to another with concealed carry or any other issues, you had better research the laws of the state where you're going, because where you came from, it could be entirely different with respect to those issues, self-defense, protecting your property, do's and don'ts, and what might be a crime in one particular state could be perfectly acceptable in another. And citizens need to be aware of that. It's not very simple. Attorneys can't even figure it out sometimes, but it has to be kept in mind.
You know, there used to be a website, I think it went down, and they told you, you know, you can't, this isn't gospel, you need to check yourself, but they would keep track of the CCW laws and have it on there for every state. Somebody asked me today about going to they're going to vacation in the South for a week. And, you know, they have a CCW license with that. So, well, you know, you really need to check what that state says. Get the law, because it's not the same.
Correct. There are two websites, Keith, I'd recommend to your listeners. The National Rifle Association does have that information.
All right.
The NRA website has concealed carry restrictions, prohibitions, do's and don'ts for every state. And then if you go to the Ohio Attorney General website, OAG, I think, .org or whatever it is, they have a concealed carry link, and there are certain states that they have reciprocity with, which means our concealed carry licenses are accepted in their states, but it's not all 50 states. It's only a handful. So there are a couple states that are very, very strict. For example, the eastern states, I'm going to tell you, New York is very strict. You will not be able to carry your concealed carry license or gun in New York with your concealed carry license from Ohio. They will not accept that. I understand California is pretty much the same way, but there are some states, primarily our surrounding states or those nearby, that say, okay, if you've got an Ohio permit, you can carry in our state under the same circumstances you can in Ohio. But if you look at the list on the Ohio Attorney General's website, I don't think there's more than about 10 or 15 of them. So they've attempted to get more reciprocity. They're still working on it, but you can't assume that that permit will allow you to go anywhere in the country and carry concealed.
Texas has the most, I haven't looked for about 4 years, but Texas used to have the most stringent qualifications, the most background checks, the most hours of training, the performance test. And I think I told you when I took my test, people on both sides of me failed the performance test. Both of them failed. So it wasn't that easy. You had to load and reload and shoot strings of, you know, six and four and that type of thing. And I think they put that in there so that people that were really as bright as they should be to carry a gun wouldn't to. So let me ask you something else I think is very important for business owners and small business. There's a change in here about what you can do on your own property if you, for example, if you have a liquor license, right?
Well, if you have a liquor license and you are the permit holder, and that means you. In other words, Keith Haley owns a bar and Keith Haley's name's on the liquor license. You can carry concealed in your premises while you're serving people drinks as long as you're not consuming. Now, obviously, if you're drinking along with the rest of them, having a beer or a shot every now and then, your exception doesn't apply. But if you own the premises, your name's on the permit, you can do that. The only problem is here, it does not apply to any of your employees. Say you have your wife there working, your son, your daughter on a weekend, or a buddy of yours. They cannot carry concealed. It only applies to the permit holder. And actually, the law, they use the word principal permit holder.
You mean your table servers can't carry?
No, and again, it would only probably apply to a mom-and-pop operation. You know, I was thinking the other day about Applebee's or TGIF's or Ruby Tuesday's. Who's the permit holder in those places? Probably some corporation in New York or Chicago.
Yeah.
So in those restaurants or bars, it'd be unlikely that anyone could carry concealed. And if you're a patron, the restriction still applies. You cannot carry into a bar or restaurant, although you can carry into a carry-out type of place, a grocery store, a stop-and-go, quick stop, et cetera. That has been changed, too. You can go in there carrying concealed. But if they're actually pouring alcohol, people are consuming it there, i.e. a bar or restaurant, unless you are the permit holder, him or herself, no carrying concealed.
You know how that is in Texas?
I can only imagine.
Law says that if you make more than 50% of your profits from alcohol, you can't carry in that place. So the place that would mean a place like TGIF or Bennigan's or something like that, they're a food establishment that sells alcohol, so you can carry in.
Well, I didn't break it down to the 50% rule because I could see a lot of problems with that because they'd have to almost go through everyone's records and say, oh, we got you. You serve 51% alcohol and 49% food. The basic rule in Ohio is if it's dispensed in an open bottle, a glass, a wine glass, a shot glass, no carrying concealed unless you are the principal permit holder and you are not consuming the alcohol.
Right. Now, there's another one in there that you told me about picking up your kids at school.
That used to be a real problem. Previous law said that you could not carry concealed in a school zone, and that basically meant school property. So if you pulled into a school parking lot to drop your kids off, you could not carry your weapon concealed. You had to have it locked in a trunk, unloaded, et cetera, which was almost unworkable. That means you'd have to pull off the road before you got to the school, take your gun off, unload it, put it in the trunk or whatever, take your kids, drop them off, get off the property, get your gun out, etc. Now, if you are going on the school property for just a short stop to let people off or on, and you do not get out of the car, that's the key there. You remain in the vehicle, you can carry concealed. You can leave your weapon on you, but it's, again, designed only for the short stops, pick up, drop off, and you stay in the car.
When I wrote that paper way back in the 90s when Texas passed that law, I started it out that way. I said that you needed a skyhook to carry this gun because, you know, you start off, you drive, you're going to drop your kid off. Nope, can't do that. Can't take the gun on school property. Then, you know, you're going to stop and go in the carry out and get some cigars. Nope, can't do that. Then, you know, you're going to drive through a county park because it's shorter. Nope, can't do that.
Well, I know, and that again, just created more problems. And, again, you're going through all this unloading and loading guns or getting them out or putting them away. And I will say this, though, people still need to remember that carrying on school property is still off limits if it's not just for that reason. You can't go to a football game, a basketball game, and carry concealed. And also, private business owners, if you have a private business, it could be a doctor's office, a law office, a dentist office, a stop-and-go, a cigar shop, a hairdresser salon, whatever you want, they still have the right to post on their front of their premises, no concealed weapons in here, and you have to comply with that. They have an absolute right to do that because it's private property. So concealed carry weapon holders in Ohio, at least, have to be cognizant of that. And if they approach a place and it says no concealed carry weapons allowed, you either have to walk away or go in at your peril, because if you're caught with it in there, you could be subject to, you know, legal ramifications.
Does a church fall in that same category, or is that a separate?
No, Keith, absolutely the same. It's a private, any private entity, anything you can think of. I mean, if you, let's get down to being silly here a minute, but if I, Tim Rodenberg, was so much anti-gun, I was worried about people coming over for dinner and carrying a concealed weapon, I could put a sign out front of my house.
Okay,
no concealed weapons in here. Now, it has to be signed. There does have to be a sign out there, believe it or not. But if there is a sign on any piece of private property that's owned or operated by a private operator, not government property, but private property, they can restrict that. And government property, by the way, there's a change in that. Any office buildings that are regularly used to conduct daily business that you might think of as a government operation, i.e. courthouses, administration buildings, police stations, they are absolutely off limits. No concealed carry in those premises, of course, except by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
But outside, they've liberalized the rule. Parking lots, parks, shelter houses, rest stops along the interstate, they are now okay. You can carry concealed there, but the rule basically, keep in mind there, is if it's a building where they're conducting business, processing papers, answering phones, you know, they're working on computers. If it's an actual building, the answer is no, but it's a governmental outside structure that would you think consider something more outside, it's now okay, and that was not the case before, or there was a lot of confusion before about that at least.
Tell me what you do administratively here. As a sheriff, the law permits you to issue that that permit, or to take the application and run them through the training and all that business. How does that work?
Well, Keith, I've always been a proponent of this whole thing. I think it levels the playing field, puts the good guys and bad guys on a fair plane. There was a lot of doom and gloom predicted back in late 90s, but even into the 2000s, when the law was passed in 2004, there were anti-gun advocates saying, we're going to have shootouts at the OK Corral. Citizens are going to be shooting each other. Bystanders are going to get shot. It never happened, and I'm glad to see that. And it shows that most of our concealed carry weapons holders, probably the vast majority of them, are extremely responsible. And we set up a very user-friendly process. In fact, so much so, about 60 to 70% of our applicants are from out of county.
Really?
A citizen can A citizen can go to an adjacent county, which means one that touches them. That's the best way of remembering that. If you live in a certain county and you've got one right next door, north, south, east, or west, that touches you, you can either apply in your own county or go to another county. And Basically, what you do is you need to have a training certificate. You've received it required 12 hours of training. You have to have an ID card, picture ID, generally a driver's license. And you come into the office, and the fee is roughly $50 to $60. You have to pay that at the time. Your fingerprints are taken. Your picture is taken. And the application is filled out. You can do that generally online. Most sheriff's offices actually have those online. You can download and print. And it takes a couple to 4 weeks max, and you have a license which looks very similar to a driver's license. You are called. You have to come in and pick it up. We don't mail them out because we don't want them to get lost. We just ask you to come by and pick them up and sign for them, the actual applicant. And you're good to go for now 5 years. The renewal term has been extended. That wasn't this law. That was a previous law that was changed to 5 years now. So the permits are good now for 5 years. And every 5 years, basically much the same as a driver's license, you have to go back through the drill. But the best way of finding out what you need to do is on the county sheriff's website of your own county, or if they don't have it or you're unclear about that, the Ohio Attorney General has a very, very good link on their website about concealed carry. It's got all the questions and answers, and if you have any questions, who to call, phone contacts, et cetera.
And I'm reading an Associated Press article right now that quotes you, the article. It says that, this may not be the end. It's as easier to interpret for citizens and the police, but you say, but stand by, because they will be implemented next week and some new issues are likely to come up. Are you predicting anything?
I don't see a whole lot of problems, Keith, but as with every other law, and I was an attorney, as you know, for 15 years total before becoming the sheriff, 5 years as a defense attorney and 10 years as a prosecutor. Anytime you have any law that's written down or that regulates human conduct, and it's in a matter of, I guess you might say, a few words or a paragraph or two, there's going to be a comma misplaced or an and instead of an or some other verbiage. It's going to require some interpretation, and it's very possible that that will require some future amendments down the road. We'll have to wait and see. I think this has helped resolve a lot of them, but I wouldn't say this is the end of it.
Is there anything that you would like to see, if you could pick two or three things that would loosen this up or tighten it up, actually?
No, Keith, I think what they've done, the Ohio legislature, and it makes sense, is at first there was still a lot of concern. It was a reluctantly passed piece of legislation, I might say, back in 2004. I think everyone came on board and they sort of agreed with it, but there were still some questions and nagging doubts, I guess you could say. There were some concerns about, God, is this going to lead to shootouts? Are citizens going to be accidentally shot by concealed carry weapon holders? Is it going to create more problems than it solves? And that didn't happen. So I think what we've seen with this new law, and I hopefully we'll see in the future, is some loosening of restrictions with a recognition of, hey, these people are pretty responsible. We haven't had any major incidents, and we haven't in Claremont County. I might add, there have been no concealed carry weapon holders in the last 4 years that have created any major problems. Now, I have heard of some issues with road rage, and we know what that is today, where someone gives someone the finger and someone else yells, that there have been some weapons brandished. But to my knowledge, no concealed carry weapon holder shooting at anyone. So I think it's a pretty good step in the right direction, and I think if it works out, we'll probably see some more loosening in the future.
Oh, great. Tim, I want to thank you. We're about out of time, and I couldn't have a better person to have on the show to talk about this. I hope maybe some of the folks can you can download and save that show and give it to somebody in case they need some scoop on it. So thank you very much, and we'll be talking in the future, Tim.
Thanks for having me on, Keith. It was a pleasure, and you have a great evening.
All right, say hello to everybody there. Bye.
I'll do the same. You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight. We'll be seeing you next week. Look on the billboard to see what we got, what we have coming up.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again. Some sunny day. say hello to the folks that I know. Tell them I won't.